As we look around as an office, we have one of our values is innovation and looking to how we can use the services that we provide to the legislature in new and better and improved ways wherever we can.
Earlier today, the Legislative Audit Subcommittee met to discuss findings of two recently completed audits into the functions of Utah's governance. One focusing on the administration and performance of the Park City School District, and the other evaluating high-risk vulnerabilities within Utah government. Joining us today to discuss the findings of these audits is the Legislative Auditor General, Cade Minchie, and his team. Cade, thanks so much for taking the time today.
Thank you, Edward.
Cade, why don't you go ahead and just give us a real quick overview of these two audits. What exactly do they say, and why are they important for the legislative auditors?
Thank you. We had a great audit committee. The first one we want to talk about today is the Park City School District audit. And I'll just give a real high-level overview. Then we'll have Leo Blevins, who is the audit manager on that, go into more detail. It's part of our systemic audit review that we do of school districts, the third one we've done. It has some important findings with internal control and process, and also gives a little bit of insight as to how the district can serve some populations of that community from an education standpoint in a little better fashion. The high-risk one, that's not going to be your traditional audit that you normally see from us. And we're really excited about talking about that one, but if it's okay, maybe we kick it over to Leah, and then we'll get to that high-risk one later.
Yeah. So Leah, why don't you go ahead and tell us about this Park City audit? Like Cade mentioned, it's one in a series that the legislative auditors are doing on the different school districts throughout the state. Can you explain what that process is looking like and what we found in this specific audit on Park City School District?
Absolutely. This is the third of these we've done, and as we keep going, we keep refining the process. But for years, we've helped state agencies to improve and to get better. Our goal is to do that same thing with education and with these districts. And so we go in looking for ways to help them improve and also acknowledge any good things that they do. So that's the goal of this type of audit. Park City audit in particular, Park City is an interesting place. It's a different audit than we've done of the other districts, but they're high performing. Their students are high performing students in general. And so they're doing a lot of things right. But we have some suggestions. The first area are their internal controls. These are things that help an agency get to their goals and prevent negative things from getting in the way. The inadequacy of their internal controls was really shown in two areas. First, Park City has an interesting situation where because it's a former mine, all of their dirt is slightly contaminated, and there are requirements for what you can do with any soils that you dig up. And Park City dug up two pretty large soil piles, essentially, and did not follow some of the requirements for how to safely deal with that and dispose of it correctly. Because of this, it will be up to $3 million to move this soil in an appropriate way. The other internal control area that they need to strengthen is over their school construction. The school district didn't comply with all of the county code, nor did it apply with state requirements through the school board. Because of this, construction on some of their schools that was occurring was shut down until they complied with some of these, which causes delays and increase in costs. Mm-hmm. And so that's the importance of those internal controls and some of their construction and environmental compliance. Mm-hmm.
And now some of these environmental factors in particular, like you mentioned, are pretty unique to Park City itself. But these construction processes, is there anything that we can learn from the failures of the Park City School District in this instance that can be generally applied to other school districts that can help bolster the entire system?
Edward, that's a fantastic question, because part of our section on the construction is a recommendation for the Legislative Audit Subcommittee to consider a statewide audit of school construction. In the process of looking into Park Cities, we found some pretty concerning risk areas in school construction throughout the state that we'd like to be able to get in there and make some recommendations about how to really bolster that process and modernize it.
And when you say to apply some internal controls to better manage some of these processes, specifically on how Park City disposes of some of this environmentally sensitive materials, but what do those internal controls look like specifically? What does that mean for the school district administrators that are carrying out this work?
Right, that's a great question. The issue is Park City, to their credit, are the ones who realized what they had done. They contacted DEQ and let them know. So that's to their credit. The internal controls, the intent of those is to have stopped it from occurring in the first place. So policies are always a good internal control for people to know what's going on. Sometimes, and it reportedly happened in this situation, when there's turnover on your staff, if it's one person who knows about the controls and that person leaves, you just forget. And so having some overlapping of knowledge and of duties within, so there's some backup. We always use the phrase, if someone's hit by a bus, you want the function to be able to continue, even though they're sadly gone. So that's what the internal controls are, I think.
So is there anything else that we learned from this audit specifically for Park City School District, or that could be applied for all Utah school districts?
Absolutely. One of the things that we looked at that really applies at this point to Park City is some of their more vulnerable populations, and their English language learners, there's some Hispanic groups that are part of this population, are underperforming what they would be expected. Their performance versus the performance of the students not in those groups, there's a pretty marked gap. And there are some things that the federal government and that the state require to help with some accountability for those groups that we really think that Park City specifically can strengthen. As far as statewide goes, we make a second recommendation having to do with strategic plans. Park City has some great goals. They've done the first part of a strategic plan, but the enactment of those is weak. So there's few strategies that connect the plan to the actual actions. The boots on the ground part of some of their strategic plan is missing out. And in the process of looking at these three districts, as well as other districts to compare to, we've seen that with a lot of districts. Their strategic plans are not operating to the point that you would hope they could. And strategic plans are important. They help an organization reach their goals. And it's great to set these goals, but without a plan for how to accomplish them, it's not going to happen. And so we recommend that they consider an audit of that statewide.
Thank you. So shifting gears, Kate, to this other audit that your team performed, is this high risk identifying and mitigating critical vulnerabilities within Utah? This audit looks a little different than most of your other audit reports. Can you talk a little in detail about why exactly we felt the need to perform this audit and why exactly this audit is so different from most of the other reports your team kicks out?
Thanks, Edward. Happy to talk about that. As we look around as an office, we have one of our values is innovation and looking to how we can use the services that we provide to the legislature in new and better and improved ways wherever we can. But from a high-level space, we asked ourselves, how could we, as an office, with the resources that we have been given from the legislature, from taxpayer funds, how can we best help serve the citizens of the state and the Utah State Legislature? Something that we give a lot of thought to, and something that I personally give a lot of thought to. As we looked at that, we've come up with a few ideas. We have a Center for Government Excellence that we are developing that has a best practice handbook, which we've talked about in the past. We have this thing that Leah just talked about, which is an education excellence division that we have created. But here today is talking about another innovation that we have created from the Office of the Utah Legislative Auditor General is this high-risk list. So what we did is we looked at the entire state of Utah. And we said, okay, what are some risk areas that exist out there that could, if not corrected, hurt the vitality of the state and our potential to move forward and to grow and to prosper? And so there was a lot of areas out there that we looked at. There's 12 things here that are on the list. But we think that this is an opportunity to say, legislature and others, here's a list of items of critical importance to the state. What it does is it helps put them in one place and to organize them and then to give some benchmarks of how we can go about improving them. So yeah, not like our normal audits. We have, to my knowledge, never audited the entire state of Utah before, as we're kind of teasing about. But with that, I want to turn it over to Darren for some more insight on this.
Awesome. So Darren, like Cade mentioned, there are 12 areas of vulnerability that your team has identified within the state of Utah. And that's not to say that we just only have 12 problems within the state. This is not an exhaustive list. But like Cade mentioned, to make this list really signifies something from the Legislative Auditor General's office. Can you talk about those 12 areas and what it means to be on this list?
Thanks, Edward. Like Cade said, we've become very passionate about this, even though this is only our first go-around. In fact, the audit subcommittee has showed a lot of faith in us because when we approached them a year or so ago with this concept, they saw the vision that it was a way that we could provide a preventative service in addition to our normal post-audit function. We do give some credit to the Government Accountability Office on the federal level. They provide a high-risk list to the Congress every other year, and we pitched that idea to the audit subcommittee. They said, hey, let's do that for Utah. In fact, we put it into our statute that we would look at areas that may threaten public funds or programs, or areas that are vulnerable to fraud, waste, abuse, or mismanagement, or my favorite is the areas that require transformation. We have areas that you could probably guess are critical in Utah, and maybe we just are missing something. So that's what we try to do in our commentary of these areas. Let me list off the areas that we presented to the committee today. Utah's water needs, Utah's water infrastructure, educational pathways, mental health, substance use, strategic human capital, meaning our state employees, housing affordability, Utah's energy policy, together cybersecurity and data privacy, state revenue diversification, real property management, and contract performance management. So you can see it is sort of like auditing the whole state. In fact, when we started this, we brought to Kate and the management team a list of almost 30 areas. We thought, you know, if you have 30 areas, you might as well have none, because how do you focus on that many? We wanted to focus on impact, okay? Lots of areas we could look, but where do we have the most risk of impact? And in three areas, is there injury or potential loss of life? Are there fiscal damages, or can this impact the economy or impact our service delivery? And as you recall the list I just read, you can see how that would go together. So the real goal of the list isn't just to maintain a list, it's to see, can we move forward? Maybe move some of these areas off? We had a framework that existed of four areas. Is there an action plan in this high-risk area to find corrective action? Do we have the capacity that we need to fix these things? Is there monitoring, appropriate monitoring and metrics? Is there just overall progress, demonstrated progress? So that's what we're looking for when we talk about the high-risk list. The way it'll be a little bit different than traditional audit is we don't actually have recommendations. The report shows detail by detail these 12 areas, and several of them have sub-areas. Like when we talk Utah's water, it wasn't just, okay, we have water needs, we're infrastructure. We said, how's our data? How's the agricultural optimization? How's our secondary metering? How's dam safety? How are our major water systems and aqueducts? And beyond our drinking water supply, how's our stormwater and wastewater? So we'll put that into our framework we do in the audit. And so we have kind of a gauge of where we are. Mm-hmm.
And so this audit in particular really provides a snapshot to the legislature of the most pressing vulnerabilities that we have in our state right now. And so, as you mentioned, there aren't traditional recommendations like your office would typically put forth. But the goal is to see these things one by one start to drop off, to see those vulnerabilities plugged. How do we accomplish that if there are no recommendations? And what is the goal to see these issues one by one start to tick off this list?
The way we will accomplish that is we will do regular follow-up on this. Right now, it's planned for every other year, but that could change. The audit subcommittee can weigh in on that. And then we will reassess in those four areas and say, we said that they were in progress, for example, on our high hazard dams. Are they still in progress, or have they met some things? And we can show that progress in the follow-up, where we have 80 dams that we haven't really gotten to that are high hazard. Do we have 60 now? Have we made some progress?
Just a note on that as well. One thing that I really like that the audit team has done, if you go to the report, for those that maybe don't know how to get there, it's OLAG, O-L-A-G, olag.utah.gov. We right there on the home page. The audit team has put together a nice visual, one-page summary on every one of these 12 things. What we have is action plan, capacity, monitoring, and program. And each one of those has a status level, met, not met, that the team will monitor these going forward. Mm-hmm. And so it'll be real easy to compare this in a new year to see how that beehive has changed. Mm-hmm. So we think that's a helpful thing, hopefully, on how to check it.
So it really does turn into a dashboard for legislators to see at a glance, how are we doing and how can we improve our systems throughout the state to eliminate some of these vulnerabilities?
Exactly. And the hope is some of these areas will fall off, but the follow-up will also say, okay, where do we need to go next?
Mm-hmm. Well, we look forward to seeing how we can solve those issues and see some of these items drop off over the next couple of years.
Edward, thanks again for letting us come in and talking about this on the podcast. We enjoy doing these audits, And we'll look forward to you next time, which will be October. There'll be three reports released in October and three reports released in November. So still a lot to do for 2023.
Thanks, Caden. We look forward to hearing all about it.